welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I'm Fiona.
And I'm Sarah, and very excited to introduce episode 3 in our Conception to Production summer season.
Fantastic.
With the awesome and amazing James Oliva, who we were very excited to speak to about What's the Frequency podcast.
We were indeed. And if you're excited by this podcast, please do contact us at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
And also, if you have looked as much as you can at the What's the Frequency podcast site and ours, jump on over to podcasthost.com, where you can also find valuable information about how to further your amazing adventures in podcasting.
And in the meantime, here is James Oliva.
I'm so excited. Hello, I've got James today with me, who is an amazing voice actor as well as a producer. Hello, James, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very good.
Excellent.
Marvellous. And just for the crazy listeners that for some reason don't know who you are, could you just give us a little bit of a rundown on who you are and what you do in the world of audio drama?
Yeah, sure. You know, I've been voice acting in audio drama for a little while now. So I started in Greater Boston as Michael,
awesome.
Which is a wonderful, very unique audio drama. And I've dabbled here and there in some other people's stuff. Like I did Starship Iris. I had a small little bit on that. I'm dead, so I don't mean to give away any spoilers, but I was brief. I just did a Radiation World thing. Yeah. And
I love that show.
You know, I have some stuff. It's an amazing show. Yeah. It cracks me up. Yeah, you know, I've had a little thing here and there where I did like a little thing for Ars Paradoxica and Jim Robbie and the Wanderers.
What
and,
a great list.
So I've just been kind of getting around a little bit.
Yeah, spreading those wings. Awesome. And what do you do, you know, for actual money?
That's a great question. You know, right now I'm home. I take care of my father-in-law. I'm a caretaker at the moment. So, but before that I was doing sales and I was a retail manager for a little while. So, you know, very exciting stuff, very utterly like James Bond-esque sort of stuff going on in my life then. So,
oh, very exciting. We're all imagining you now in a lovely tuxedo.
Yes, globetrotting and all sorts of stuff. It's amazing.
Exciting. And you're just about to or have engineered the beginnings of an amazingly exciting podcast, of which I'm very excited to be a part of, called What's the Frequency? Can you tell us, firstly, like, how on earth did this start to come about from sort of your voice acting background? Has it been something that's been burning a hole in your pocket for a while?
Well, you know, I've always been a writer. I've always, you know, been working on something. So I started out, you know, when I was a young kid, I used to write for puppetry.
Uh-huh.
I used to write for puppets to be performed and stuff like
How
that
cool.
for like this group. And then it grew into stage writing. I was a playwright for a short while and had a little success there, but came out to L.A. to do screenwriting. Uh-huh. So a lot of things that I write tend to get birthed off of the previous thing that I wrote. So there are like ideas or something like that I come up with that kind of jazz me a little bit, but I think like, oh, I didn't really use it to its full potential. And then I kind of start thinking about what other ways can I use it? And that's kind of where this thing came from. It was kind of like an alchemy of like, I was just getting started in audio drama. I had just written this horror screenplay that I was putting out to different competitions. And there were elements in that play, in that screenplay that I wanted to explore. And so I kind of started developing this idea around it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of really where it started.
Amazing. And currently you're at the stage where it has been cast and you're about to get recording. So could you just talk us through the process of like the conception of those ideas that you've had stemmed from the other things and how it kind of went from there? So have you solely written it yourself?
I hadn't fully planned to do it all on my own. I planned on doing the first round and basically setting up the entire world a bit and like writing the first draft, and then I was considering bringing some people, other people in to help along the way, but that didn't really work out. So I had to kind of go back into it and really bang away at the second draft and get it up to snuff. So I mean, overall though, I mean, what you see on the page and what you're going to get is pretty close to the first draft in a weird way. I know that's not a very It's not a very cool thing to admit, but...
Well, I don't know. It reads very excitingly so far.
I'm really super happy with it. I don't really look on, back on a lot of it and go like, ooh, I should really... Like, a lot of times when you write something, you can be really self-critical and really maybe even a little embarrassed by certain things and say to yourself like, oh, I would totally change that. But I really can't... don't see a whole lot of that here. And I think that's, you know, yes. It's good. But yeah, it was definitely a labor of love, and it's certainly a singular vision.
And how much planning goes into it? So are you somebody who sits down and, you know, has massive sheets or post-it notes, or you put it into your writing program? How do you work with that consensus of an idea and then you get it down on the page?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've notoriously, most of my writing life, have been a procrastinator. I'm horrible. I make negotiations with myself all day long. I go like, we'll do it in a little while. We'll do it in a little while. And then I usually leave myself like half an hour to do any real writing. And then I try to write furiously for that half hour. Yeah. And then I usually tell people like, you know, like, oh, I'm 20 pages into the show. And then I'm really only like 10, but it kind of keeps me... It kind of keeps me motivated because the people are like, you should be done now. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm almost there.
Lovely. That lying to yourself thing. I do this all the time.
I find it to be one of the best ways to do it. But this way, this time out, I really from like full conception of like when I sat down to start the first episode to when I finished, it was 2 months. Which is probably the quickest I've ever churned out. And it was 12 episodes, so it's about 250 pages long. 2 months, 250 pages long, not a whole lot of rewrites. You know, to me, it's a big step forward in my writing, you know, personal life, as far as there's a nice little evolution there.
And characters-wise, have you sort of put a lot of research into specific types, or how did you come up with all the different people within your world?
That's also a great question. I will do research. I think it's important, but I don't do a tremendous amount of research in a general way. I try not to get too bogged down in a lot of the details because I feel like I've done that in the past, and I feel like a lot of writers might do that. And then you feel almost obligated to show off what you've learned. Mm, yeah. So you find reasons to bring it up or to incorporate it when maybe it's just best not to bring it up at all. So I try to focus in on, I tend to bring a lot of acting into my writing. So I'll think from the perspective of the actor, and I'll think from the perspective as I'm embodying the character and try to give it its own thought process. So that's really the method that I go with when I'm sitting down to write. It's a lot of like schizophrenia almost, like where you've got these multiple personalities and you're flipping back and forth. And that's really the best way I can put it, and that's the almost honest way. For the characters
And you had a specific story arc in mind. I mean, did that stay the same, you know, from your progression, or did that kind of change throughout your process?
Yeah, you know, the end of the season was always basically the end of the season. There were bits of it that were meant to be in the second season, but as the show was supposed to be very folded and very differently. It was supposed to be very Walter and Whitney centric, and they were supposed to be basically in every scene, and then all the other cast of characters were supposed to be around them. You were supposed to follow them basically everywhere. So what happened was is that I started like dividing up the show a little bit, and the more I did that, the more the show opened up in a different way, and it just took me in a different direction. I started creating all these other characters that were never even really in my head, you know, because it was supposed to be this mystery of like, you know, where's this writer, and there were supposed to be all these suspects, and they were, you know, Walter and Whitney were going to go on these sort of traditional audio drama, not audio drama, but maybe even, I was trying to bring it back to more of the serialized radio dramas of like, of the past, put them in these hijinks.
Good word.
Hijinks, where they're supposed to kind of like get in themselves into a sticky situation and always have to get out. I didn't really do that in the first season as much as I thought I would, but I think I'm happier with this version. It feels like it's got more substance to it, and it's got a lot for people to do. So I came away really happy with the end product, even though it's not what I originally had thought I was going to do.
How exciting though when that happens. It kind of blossoms into something else.
Yeah, you gotta go with it. Like if you're spinning out of control, just turn the wheel into the spin and, you know.
Skid through, yes. The show itself, could you give us a little bit of information about what The Frequency is about?
Sure, yeah. It's set in Los Angeles, 1940s. It follows primarily Walter Troubles Mix. He's got a little nickname called Troubles. Whitney is his, I guess she's kind of like his Girl Friday in a way, but it's a little more than that. They're not intimately together, but they are intertwined in every other way.
Some sort of symbiotic.
They are symbiotic that way. There's a symbiosis between them, and they are their identities, I would say, are even maybe a little blurred. So she's his muscle, and she's quite strong, and she's, it was like 15 years separating the two of them, and they get themselves looking for a writer who's gone missing. Mm-hmm. While that's happened, there's been a mysterious broadcast that is seemingly making the city of Los Angeles go, the people in it go mad. And so the world is becoming this mad, unreliable place while he's trying to stay on task and stay looking for this writer. So it's kind of like a setting up just sort of this mystery. I've had some people describe it's got like, you know, Lost elements to it, or it's got like, cool. It's meant to have some Lynchian, maybe even some Charlie Kaufman-esque sort of moments, and certainly a lot of things that we're going to do with the audio and some of the ways in which the medium that we're using, that we're going to try to do a lot of different things. And it's meant to be a little funny. Right. It's meant to be a little scary. It's meant to be sci-fi and noir and psychedelic and, you know, all these wonderful little things.
Amazing. In regards to the casting, so from the page to the casting kind of stage, what elements happened before you were able to kind of say, right, I've got it, and now we need to crack on with the moving it on to the next phase?
Sure. I think, you know, you've got to know that where you're at with the show is that you have the characters you have, and you know that regardless of any type of maybe a little tweaks or rewrites here and there, that you're not going to lose anything. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really where the point is. You go, okay, I think it's safe to cast now. Yeah. And then from there, we just, you know, put together a general cast list of the main characters, knowing that we could cast out of those that, say, didn't get those parts, that we can draw from those people to cast other parts. Yeah. So there was a lot of that going on, too.
Yeah. And what did you do then? So where did you put your casting calls out, and what kind of information went out to?
Audio Drama has a really great community. I know that you're a part of it, and you get to see it every day. So, I mean, some of that was relying on friends through the Audio Drama to get the word out, and to get the word out to maybe even some of their cast members. But we had multiple different ways that we went about it. I used a lot of social media, and I think that's something that's really important to the whole process. I think a lot of podcasters and people that are into podcasting use social media in extraordinary ways in which I might be slightly too old to understand fully. But
I'm with you.
So, you know, I understand it in a very almost abstract way, but I think that at the same time, it's very it's detrimental to use it. And that's how we did it. You know, we went through went through Twitter, I went through Facebook, and I paid Facebook to like amplify the post and to get it out there.
Okay. And how much did that cost you just to pay Facebook?
Facebook has different tiers that you can choose, and you can go like, I just want to spend this many dollars, and they'll go, okay, well, this is all it's going to get you. So I spent $30 on my first advertisement, and I spent another $20 after that, and they were both on the casting, one at the beginning, one at the end. I did another advertisement in the middle, but I didn't pay for it. I just sent it out. There's different social media sites and stuff like that.
And were you able to measure the success of that in any way?
Yeah. Facebook lets you know like how many click-throughs you got from the actual thing and how many likes your Facebook page got. You know, for a show that didn't have that, you know, we don't have a lot to go off of, because I mean, you know, I might do some podcasting here and there, but as far as like where I fall in the hierarchy of actors in the world, you know, I'm not as well known. So it's not like putting my name out there is going to draw in like hundreds of submissions.
Oh,
I don't have exactly like a niche going in that I think calls out anything purely distinct other than I'm just another podcast to a lot of people where, you know, I might know better and be like, all right, I got this great thing. But I got a decent amount of response, and I was really happy with it.
Excellent. Yeah. What did you specifically send out in this casting call? Did you send out specific things for character development?
You know, each character got a character breakdown to just kind of give them a quick way to access point to their character, because the sides themselves don't give you really much of a clue as to the show. And I kind of did that on purpose. I didn't want to really give anything away.
Yeah, spoilers.
So, but I wanted to give them a head start and say, like, this is the guy, this is who you should be playing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at least give them that head start. And then from there, you just kind of have to wait and see if, you know, how they react to that. And some people reacted beautifully, and some people just sent in really good auditions that weren't necessarily right for that particular part. But to be honest, I didn't get any really bad auditions, and that was really impressive. I'm kind of a snob sometimes. I will be judgmental in my privacy of my own home, and I'll be like, ugh. But I'd say I can't think of really anybody who sent in a terrible audition, with the exception of Sarah Golding.
She like?
I'm totally teasing.
Nutcase.
You did a great job, actually. And actually, and not only that, you did a wonderful job on, I think it's Winnebago Warrior, Winnebago Man.
Cheers, yes. Love
so
that
I was sitting on your audition, and I was like, where am I going to put Sarah? And then I heard you on that, and I was like, I know where she goes.
Hooray! I was very, very excited about them. I was on this. So yeah, that's very cool. Thank you. And with regards to like the auditions you actually got, what was really good about the really good auditions? What do people need to be doing to get a part in a show?
Well, I think one of the things that I was most impressed with is that the show is meant to be experimental. It's meant to, you know, we're going to play with a lot of different audio stuff. Like, and when I say that, I mean, we're going to do alternate lines of things, and we're going to be able to play them against the real lines. And there's just some different ideas that we're playing with to make it a surreal experience. And some people seem to really get the broadness that I was shooting for on the surface with these characters. So when people were playing and having fun and sort of taking those risks, I look for risks. I like actors who take risks. I like people who aren't holding back because they're afraid that I'm going to snicker, or somebody's going to snicker on the other end and go, what are you doing? You know, if you're going to do it, just do it and commit. And that's probably the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I enjoyed the most out of some of these, was that just when somebody got it, I was like, yeah, you got it. All right, awesome. I've got to keep you in mind. I got to keep you somewhere on the board.
Yeah.
I really rejected very few people, and even the people that got rejected only got rejected because I really had no other place to put them. And then I have people that I accepted as ensemble. I was like, do you want to be a various voice at some point? And they were like, yeah, okay.
Awesome. So, that's brilliant. So you've kind of had a bigger cast to pull from if you need, future characters. Great. Yeah. And so the two sort of main-ish characters are played by Kareem Comfrey and Tanya Milojevic. That's correct, isn't it? And obviously two amazingly versatile and cool actors. What was it about their auditions that you sort of ticked all the boxes and thought, yes?
Well, you know, for some people, it's just a combination of how their voice fit into the role that I was looking for, and just maybe in some cases, the versatility of what I thought they brought to the role, or how much they got the material. You know, the somebody who, in some cases, I actually got worried because I had had somebody who I loved towards the end, and I had already had it in my mind to cast one character as our lead. But another guy came along. I mean, I swear to God, the guy sounded exactly like the guy who I just cast in the lead role. So I was like, oh my God, how can I can't use this guy, really. How can I use him? Well, you know, I was able to just send him on a callback and have him, you know, try a different role with a different accent. And he nailed it. And I was like, you know what? I have to get this guy, and I have to tell him, like, right now, he got it, because there's no point in waiting.
You need him. Jump on them once they're there. Yeah, yeah. Good stuff.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so from that point now, so you've managed to contact everybody that you have cast and send out anything else to those that you haven't. What's the next phase? What happened?
Well, next phase was, I mean, in the most minute way, it was addressing the cast, really just almost giving like a state of the address and being like, you know, hey, this is my philosophy. This is how we're going to go. And this is how I'm going to operate. You know, I believe in collaboration. I believe in respect. And I just wanted to be clear with everybody where that was going to come from. But, you know, I have particular ideas about how I want to direct this, and particular ideas about how I'd like to tackle the performances. I'm very flexible in a lot of ways with this, but there are certain things I want to accomplish. So, you know, I thought it would be best to just be forthcoming with that up front. And then from there, the next phase is scheduling. And, you know, for this particular show, what I'm going to do is, because we're very international and certainly spread out across the America,
yes,
as well as we're obviously in the UK and have some people we cast out of the UK, two very wonderful, yes, actors. So, you know, what will happen is I'll be scheduling with everybody individually at least one rehearsal over voice call, like we're doing now. We'll talk about the show, talk about the character motivation, we'll talk about everything there is to possibly talk about, and then we'll run through their lines and just I'll give them little tips and pointers and tell them what my expectations are with when they record, because I'm gonna let everybody basically record on their own, self-direct, you know, based off of the conversations that we've had. And I think that's
fantastic. Yeah.
It's a pretty respectful way, I think, to go about it.
Yeah, this is the thing, you know, because I have found with certain projects that I've been on, you're kind of left to flounder and guess what you think that maybe someone kind of wants. So, yeah, it's been really refreshing. I think you set up a Slack channel specifically for the cast. We've all been able to meet each other on there and, you know, given access to the crew members as well that are on there. And I think it's already created that lovely sense of like, yes, this is going to be great fun.
I wanted them to get a sense of camaraderie with each other too, and I thought that was important, because you know, when you do like theater or something like that, you have this melding of people that have this tie to each other that you don't often get, and I think that's missing a lot even in audio drama. So I wanted everyone to kind of get into one place and have a chance to just talk, you know, even not even necessarily talk about the show, just talk.
Yes, no, brilliant. And as I say, your ideas seem to be very specific, which is brilliant, and I think that whole, you know, hand that is guiding you is really I think something that's missing from a lot of potential audio dramas that, you know, could be made even better. When you have that director's vision, you know, as a theatre performer, you kind of get told that very specifically, whereas I think it's a lot less done in audio. So, no, that's very exciting. And you, as you say, you've got this mix of remote and local actors. With regards to, obviously, scheduling all that, you've got the time differences as well as the, you know, the fact that, you know, some people prefer to have the banter of one-to-one kind of playing off each other. So when you do record, are you going to get people together or over Source Connect or Slack or other ways or
Well, yeah, I think Source Connect is definitely going to be something that we can explore. I haven't used it myself yet. I know of it. I know Kareem had talked to me about, who's playing Walter, had talked to me about doing that with the actress who's going to be playing basically the one he has the most lines with, Whitney. And I thought that was a tremendous idea, at the very least, to get some of their stuff together, because I want them to get a sense of each other's rhythm. And I think that's good. I think for one set of people, that might be the most important set of people to get on a Source Connect. I think just about if I were to do that, everybody would have to be Source Connected. I just sat down today to figure out where everybody was, like regionally. And I made a list and I put everybody in their little categories of where they lived in proximity to each other. And I was like, I don't have anybody together except for two actors that actually do share a lot of their scenes together. Other than that, there's like nobody who shares a scene, and if they do, it's like for a brief second, so there's no point in making them all get together to be like, all right, here, record your two lines. Okay, we're done. So, you know, I think it's going to be a lot of me doing individual recordings, but as long as I think I'm involved in the way in which it's being crafted, that I think there's going to be a lot of cohesion, and I don't think we'll have to worry too much about a disjointed give and take to the scenes and the characters and the way they exchange, because I think that too comes across a lot in different podcasts when you have remote actors, that the actor seems like they do seem like they were directed remotely because the other characters in the scene don't match what they're doing.
It's
really
interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I've got a few bugbears about that, but we'll talk about that another time. But I mean, I must say, I mean, I've used Source Connect actually with Kareem a few times on, we did The Fall with Coach Studios with Dane Leonardson, who's awesome. And I think I have found the only bug that it could possibly have. so yes, and I've also done recording with Matthew Boudreau and Monique with their all sound studios there, Otherworldlies, which there was four of us on And yeah, it had its issues, you know. So there are elements to it, which is awesome. But what I did find valuable is that camaraderie on, you know, the four of us being able to chat. And, right. you know, you try not to mess about and be professional. But there is that element. You know, you want to have a good time too, huh?
yeah. Well, there is a give and take to a live exchange. And that necessarily there, no matter how subtle it could be, it is there. So you can't ever truly replace that, but I think you can get close.
No, absolutely. and with regards to sort of future editing, are you going to be doing that as well?
Yeah, well, I'm going to take care of all the assembling of the show. I talked it over with my sound guy because I was like, I wasn't sure if he was going to do it or if I was going to do it, but we felt that's where some of the directing comes into play.
Who's your sound guy?
Actually, it's really awesome. Alexander Danner, who is the co-creator of Greater Boston, who has been my platonic life mate for 30 plus years.
Hooray. You're not that old, are you?
I'm
21.
I'm 40. So. We'll have to edit that out, but but yeah.
I'm 42.
We hang out, you and I hang out with a lot of young people, so we gotta pretend.
Don't we?
So I've known him for an extraordinary long time. So he's seriously like another sibling. Uh-huh. So there's just a brothership there. So I asked him to do this because he would be involved regardless of really being involved or not. Like I'd be calling him up, being asked, you know, he's really kind of like my guide for a lot of stuff. So I, you know, asked him a lot about.
Is your Obi-Wan.
Yeah. That's a great point. He is my Obi-Wan. So. So, you know, he's going to be my sound guy. I feel like he'll understand where I'm coming from. He wanted to experiment more with sound than what he gets to do on Greater Boston. So I was like, be my sound guy. And he was like, yeah, I would love to. Mm. So my rules for most of the people involved is that I want everyone to just be able to experiment. And I think that's something that drew him in. But we talked about me doing a lot of the editing so that maintains the direction that I want. So you know, editing contributes to performance. So, I mean, how I edit something is going to affect how you seem to be acting. You know, if I put a long space between what you said and what the last person said, it makes it seem like you're doing something or saying something different.
It's like it's your fault.
Right. If you missed the line or that there's just maybe an intention there that you didn't mean. And so that's up to me. It's you know, I get to still be almost like a composer. I'm, you know, putting it all together and making the music.
Amazing. Because, yeah, what I get frustrated with actually is when, you know, you've done several takes and you're hoping that they take the one you think is best. But then when you hear it back and you think, oh, no, they used that one.
and why did they space it out like that? It sounded like it took me forever to respond or something. Like I was on a time delay. Like I was on a time delay.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's happened.
All these things.
No, that's happened. Yeah. No, that's happened.
But and what are you going to use door-wise to edit your show? What's your preference?
Well, I've decided I'm going to have to learn Reaper, as I understand Reaper's a really good editing program.
Yeah.
And I know there's everyone has their choices. Mm. You know, people use Pro Tools or I think it's Adobe Audition. And, you know, everyone has their favorite. I've been using Audacity for a long time, so I kind of know it pretty decently.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm like an expert at it, but I can get it to do things that maybe not everyone is as apt to do. I did an audiobook a little while ago and I produced the hell out of it. I think I did a great job.
Cool.
But I learned a lot when working on that and how to manipulate and how to make things sound good and pacing and timing. So, you know, to me, I like Audacity, but that's the only thing I know. So I'm going to learn Reaper, and I've heard Reaper's like less buggy, and I think you've had a problem with Audacity.
Oh my goodness! It crashes more time.
We had the
than
same
I
problem,
have.
By the way. Yeah, because I think it's because you and I, like, what we're probably doing is creating so many tracks on this one thing, and by the time we get to like the 10th or 12th track, and we go save it, it freaks out. But then you recover it, and it has like half the audio is missing, and
which try now.
Yes, no, it happened to me during my audiobook editing once when I had like. I had 40 minutes. I was powering down to like 20 or something like that. And the whole thing crashed. I had to start from scratch. And I was so broken about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you could predict it, it could work in your favor, though, because I was putting together the trailer for the show. I was doing a teaser for What's the Frequency and experimenting a little bit. And when I redid the recovery and it was like had some of the audio missing, it made the trailer sound amazing. so I was like, maybe exactly. I think I'm going to have to break Audacity more often.
Well, I have found this that actually because it's made me do it again, I've probably done it better. But so I've kind of embraced that feeling of absolute broken.
That's a great way. Yeah. That's a great way to reclaim it.
Yeah, and just go, actually, yeah, it's fine. It's okay now. It's fine. I've done it. Brilliant. And you spoke about the trailer, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about sort of your branding and the image for this podcast. So you've currently got a very beautifully sort of red emblazoned image. I don't know if you want to describe it, and we'll put this on the show notes as well so people can see what we mean.
But yeah,
how did this specific branding come about, and what else have you done marketing wise?
Well, yeah, you know, this particular piece of art, I mean, it kind of came as almost like this weird kismet thing. I had some artists I was looking at to do this, and for one reason or another, the accessibility to as many artists as I thought I had shrank considerably. Right. Luckily for me, my wife and my brother-in-law are artists, but they're not graphic artists or they don't do any graphic design or anything like that or advertising. So it was a lot of me just sort of like scouring the internet for things that I found inspiration in that I thought were strange or psychedelic and things like that. And I was drawing these crude drawings of like, oh, I think it should look like this. And they were like, I don't know what that is. And I'm like, oh, hold on. So I really worked with my brother-in-law quite a bit. He's the one that had stepped up and said, like, I want to do this. So it's not something he normally does. He's a fine artist. He put together like a few different versions of something. And I was like, yeah, these are good. I like them, but they just nothing sang. And literally like an hour after he sent me the last one, he just was like, all right, I'm going to bed, but here's one more for the road. It was this image of a skull inside of a what's a transistor, part of a transistor, like a bulb from a transistor radio with a skull inside of it. And originally I think he had written What's the Frequency on the bulb itself, but I had asked him to remove that, and then he came up with this great font that was like, so it's not quite
retro,
but it's not like the right retro for the period. It feels so like 60s, maybe like 70s or something. There's something about it that's just so like probably like late 60s, something more psychedelic. I just loved it. I just fell in love with it. And I was like, no, this is it. This is the one we've been waiting for. And I just knew it. I knew it. And I was like, this is the tile. This is our art. This is the thing that's going to be what people see when they see our show. And I could not be any happier. It's so has this iconic look to it. And I think people will be drawn to it. I think that's really what I wanted most. I felt it's so important that if you look at some of the shows that I personally like the most, some of them are so simplistic and so like. Just amazingly simplistic. Like you have Ars Paradoxica, you have Mabel. Yes. I thought Mabel has a great tile. Limetown has a great one with it's just its name and it's crossed out or terms or, you know, like there's just these great iconic looking bits of art that I feel I wanted to capture, and I use those as inspiration. And I think this is in that realm. You know, it's simplistic and it says a lot.
Well, it's easily recognizable, I think, as well, which is important, isn't it?
I think that's really important to branding.
Immense sea of them that they've got right now.
And I think that's something everyone needs to remind themselves of as they're making their podcast, or if they're thinking about creating a podcast. They really need to be thinking about what do you want people to see? What do you think they'll remember? And what would you remember? I think that's probably one of the most important things. What are you drawn to? What are the things that and I think that's probably the most important question you can have, because obviously you're a fan already if you're making a podcast, right? Or you're just severely just a failed screenwriter and you
nobody's failed.
No one's ever failed at being a screenwriter. I think that's probably the biggest question you could ask yourself into figuring out where or how to go about is what do you want? You know, what would you want out of it?
So how are you going to take this branding and marketing tool and run with it? How are other people going to find this podcast?
Well, you know, like I said, I think it's important for us to engage on social media, not just by posting stuff, but by responding to not only just questions or fans, which we don't have any yet, really. But we want to participate. So we support the community, right? So, you know, every opportunity that I get, you know, somebody has, especially, you know, I think it's important having respect for other people's things. So, you know, shows that come around that are like, hey, you know, can you help out? Can you just get out the word? Even though we don't have a product ourselves, we'd still take the time to push and support these amazing other artists. Yeah. And I think, you know, that as long as you're engaging in the social media, you're getting in people's news feeds, their news feeds. Mm-hmm. If you're getting in their news feeds, you'll stay fresh. And I think that's probably one of the most important things to know to do is to just engage. And if you don't engage, you're not going to be there, and it's going to be a harder struggle.
So it sort of needs a snowball of hype, doesn't it, to build and then
because there's no real infrastructure for, like, you know, nobody knows, like your show is great because it actually gives us a place to come to talk about the craft and talk about and what's going on, and in a way it's you know, it's a dual process because we get to explain and help other people, and we also get to advertise. It's a element of advertising. So there's not a lot of that out there. No one knows. Like, you can ask anybody in the community right now. There's maybe two people that could tell you, you know, oh, this is what you want to do. You go to this publication and they'll publish you. And, you know, there's no one knows. We're just all, you know, feeling around in the dark and trying to do our best. Yeah. And I think that's part of it. You know, if you have a good network of people and you engage on social media and you have people who love you, and I think you'll do okay.
Yeah, hooray.
Hooray.
The world just needs love, that's all. Mm-hmm. And with regards to other things, so you've got the trailer that's coming out. Whereabouts are you going to be putting the podcast when it's done? What are your methods of sharing?
Yeah. We're going to be going through Lisbon. We're going to do iTunes. Yeah. I know that I'm not, in this regard, the best person to ask, only because, you know, I'm sort of newer to the podcasting end. Like, I'm really just trying to play catch up, but I get the essence of what everyone's doing. As I understand it, SoundCloud isn't exactly the best place to put.
Yeah, I've heard it's changing.
Yeah, I've heard it's not a great place. There's other places, as I understand it, like different types of apps now that are designed specifically for audio podcasting or audio dramas, I should say, that, you know, they have their own thing about them that I have to still look into. But, you know, because we're so far off from that right now, I think that it's something that's going to flesh out as we get closer. I think that's basically, I know we're going to be on iTunes, and that's just the bread and butter there. So, and Lisbon, I know we already got a Lisbon account set up.
Good. So look out for that. And sort of, what are your top tips then? So if somebody wanted to do this themselves, they have that idea, that hub of an idea, they're able to write something together. What would you be your top tips for them from, you know, that creative process to where you're at now?
You know what,
to do.
If you're doing this solo and you're not, you know, a team of writers, I think you just got to be absolutely true to your vision. I think you, at this point in this stage, to concern yourself with, like, I've always hated the idea that if you have the opportunity to make your own thing, why are you concerning yourself with questions of like, well, you know, will we alienate the audience? Will we do this? Will we do that? Well, look, this is your art. And, you know, if you're not executing your art and you're so worried about what other people are going to think or how they're going to interpret things, you're probably already making some wrong choices. Not to say that to not concern yourself with that is also a good thing. It's not, because, you know, without anybody consuming it, you know, you're just sort of putting it out in a vacuum. So I think, but you got to start there. That's the first place you got to start, and then you can start thinking about the other stuff. But I think, like I said, you got to engage on social media. You got to not be afraid to get out there and talk and be a part of things. I think you've got to be mindful of, I think one of the things you do have to think about in regards of your audience is the landscape's changed in a lot of ways. I mean, people are looking for things that are a little bit more inclusive, and there's so many different groups out there that aren't represented. And I think if you can stay mindful of that and you can find ways to either include them or to not alienate them by being insensitive or, you know, being non-mindful of that, I think that's also something to keep in mind. I think that's actually quite important. There's a large community out there that will be there to support you as long as you are respectful to them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's because it's very diverse casting you have, isn't it, for this specific show, which is very exciting.
Yeah, no, we're very proud of it, actually. You know, we are multi-ethnic and we are multi-regional and we are represented across the board in so many different ways, very diverse. I couldn't be any happier for that. And it wasn't something that was calculated. It's just, you know, we were so fortunate to get just talented people that happened to be whatever they are. And really, just the casting turned out to be the way it is. I mean, you know, there's so many things I didn't even know until after the fact of casting about anybody's background or where they're from or anything like that. I just, you know, it's all sort of stuff I'm discovering after the fact.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you know, as far as tips are concerned, is to go out there, be a part of the community, get involved. I think you're going to need to reach out to people that are already doing it. Like, you know, people that you find a podcast that you admire. And if you have no way in as far as, you know, you don't know anybody's really doing it, well, send them a message and you know, reach out.
It's probably
one of the most inclusive, nicest communities out there as far as, you know, it's the least cutthroat.
I agree. I think there's so many wonderful people that are so happy to share or give advice or help. I think it is honestly wonderful. And I don't think I've met one loon other than my schizophrenic self, so it's all good.
I'm talking to you guys all day long in a way in which that I never really engaged like this, or at least before. And I love being around and being there for when people ask anywhere from the silliest of questions to the most serious of like, hey, how do I do this? And I love doing it.
Well, you started a Kung Fu channel on Slack.
You know what? No one's going to my Kung Fu channel anymore. And I'm really upset about it. I don't know. I had somebody leave the Kung Fu channel the other day and I was like so heartbroken that I was like, I wanted to send them a message and ask them, could you come back?
I was talking to this with someone the other day. I think it's the Sarah effect. I think if I say something on a channel, that channel goes dead somehow.
No. I think everyone is really super busy with their own stuff and they're like, I don't have time for silly Kung Fu channel.
There's always time for silly Kung Fu.
I agree. I love Kung Fu. I grew up on Kung Fu. I mean,
you need to write a Kung Fu scene in the show. If there's not one already,
there's some extraordinary fight scenes in our season, and I'm absolutely stoked because I was writing them and I was sending them over to Alex. Not the actual scenes, but I was like, you know, hey, just to let you know, I'm going to make your life impossible for a couple of scenes, and so we have some stuff that we really are going to work hard at just really just giving people a really good poke in the ear.
Amazing. You know? Yeah, good old entertainment for the year. Lovely. And so when was this series going to start to air? What's the plan time-wise?
I want to be up and out no later than October, but I'm thinking, you know, September can't be too hard. You know, since I'm home a lot, especially right now, it's a little easier for me to sit down and edit and to make the time for that. So I think I have a slight advantage in time, where some people are balancing like their work and their home life and stuff like that. And it becomes difficult to do this type of thing and to make the time for it when it's so much easier to watch the telly.
Yes.
And, you know, watch the new Twin Peaks that's coming out in about 7 days.
I'm excited. I'm getting my cherry pie ready.
I'm going to lose my mind. I can't. I just went. I was such a big Twin Peaks fan, and I was young when it came out, and I probably shouldn't have been watching it. I did, and I loved it. It ruled my world, and it was a big influence. He's a big influence on me in general, but he's a big influence on this show.
Yeah,
David Lynch as well as Charlie Kaufman. I those are two people that I think are just they find ways to disturb you without having to split someone's head open. though David Lynch will split somebody's head open every now and then.
Well, yes, let's not put anything past him. He'll split all sorts of things, really.
But he tends to be more ambiance, and I think
that's
it's really
the moods, isn't it, and the music and the atmosphere. No, very exciting.
I think that's what people can expect from the show. I think that's something to keep in mind too, as you're thinking about whether or not I should listen. I think if you want to feel a little freaked out in ways that have nothing to do with blood and guts, which sounds odd with an audio drama because it's like, well, blood and guts, what does that mean? You know, like there's not going to be really a whole lot of disgusting wet meat sound effects and stuff like that. It's going to be more like awkward audio and, you know, manipulation and stuff like that.
So I think
Intriguing.
It'll have its own place. And I think that's the other thing too, actually, if I can bring it back, is that I think you need to have original idea. I think you need to have a take, because there's a sea of podcasts out there. Everyone can have a podcast if they want. So
have fun. That's the main thing. Have fun with what you've created. Exciting. Well, we very much look forward to hearing it, and it'll be lovely to catch up with you in a short while to fathom when it's all finished and cut and done, how else you've progressed. So thank you so very much for your time, and happy creating.